You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast with your host, Ed Randall.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast. I'm joined by our draft minor league experts, Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis. Draft time is here right now, so why wait to hear what will happen when we can give you everything you need to know right now? So here is the first round. Here's how it will go. If these two guys were in charge, here's their impression of Nostradamus. I will play the role of Commissioner Rob Manfred, that poor guy. And we begin with Jim and the first pick in the 2015 first-year player draft goes to the Arizona Diamondbacks, Jim.
And we, as Ed said, we're picking the guys that we would take, but I'm also picking the guy that I believe, as of now, things can still change between now and June 8th, the Diamondbacks will take. I'm taking Dansby Swanson, the Vanderbilt shortstop. Like, he's got one of the highest ceilings in this draft. I think he probably has the highest floor of the guys who are going to go at the top of the draft. I'm confident he stays at shortstop. I think he'll hit. He's a plus runner. He's got some power, which he showed this past weekend, hit four homers at the SEC tournament. So I'm taking Dansby Swanson, number one overall.
The second pick in the draft goes to the Houston Astros. This is compensation for not signing Aiken last year, and it goes to Jonathan Mayo.
Well, I want to thank Jim for taking Dansby Swanson, because that allows me to take Brendan Rodgers, the shortstop from Lake Mary High School in the Orlando area in Florida. He's been number one on our board in terms of talent ranking pretty much from the fall, and then when we expanded to 100 in the spring. He may not be a shortstop long term, but I think you send him out as one. He does have a plus arm. He's got good hands, but it's really the bat that puts him at the top of the board. This is a guy who's going to hit for average and a lot of power. I think there's more power to come. So even if he has to slide over to third, I think the bat will profile well there. And like Swanson at number one, as Jim said, I think that if Swanson were to go number one, there's a very good chance that who I would take and who the Houston Astros will take at number two will be one and the same.
The third pick in the draft goes to the Colorado Rockies, Jim.
And I was just going to follow up on Jonathan's pick and say, for me, those are the top two players in the draft. I think you elucidated the argument for Brendan Rodgers there. I think you can make a justifiable case for either one of those guys as number one, and that's really sure. The two guys I would consider. At number three, I guess I'm just going to be lazy and save on travel. I'm going to stay in Vanderbilt, stay in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm going to go with Carson Fulmer, who has emerged, in my mind, as the top pitching prospect in this draft. If you watch Carson pitch, there's a lot of energy in that delivery. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but the more I talk to people, the more convinced they are that this guy can be a starter. He's been a very good starter for Vanderbilt for the last year and a half. Had a little bit of a rough outing at the SEC tournament, but before that, I think he'd given up something like four or five runs in his previous six starts. It's great stuff, great makeup. And just talking to guys, the delivery, there is a lot of energy there, but people feel like you can maybe slow the tempo down a little bit. And as much effort as he puts into his pitches, he keeps his stuff for 7-8 innings. He's gone deep into games. So I'm going Carson Fulmer at number three.
Let's reiterate that Toronto, Seattle, the New York Mets, Washington, and San Diego forfeited their first-round picks for signing free agents who had received qualifying offers from their previous teams. And with the fourth pick, the Texas Rangers and Jonathan Mayo.
And Jim's going to do third and fourth round so we can get those teams in, just to make sure that they're mentioned. But I'll let him handle that. Texas Rangers at number four. I think it's interesting because I think this may be the first time, and I don't know that Fulmer's necessarily going to go number three, although I could certainly see it as the Rockies try to continue to develop pitchers, and you look at some of the pitchers that they've taken, I could see it happening. But I think that if I were picking at number four, I would go with Alex Bregman, the shortstop from LSU. He is the next up, I think, on our board and a lot of people's boards. Again, there's some debate whether or not he stays at shortstop, though he has improved a tremendous amount, and I think you send him out, but he can hit. He's got some power. I think worst case, we're talking about an offensive-minded second baseman who probably doesn't take all that long to be big league ready, and I think the Rangers could use some help in the short term as long as the long term.
The Houston Astros have another pick, two of the first five, Jim.
And I'm going to go with, I'm going to take our fourth straight college player, fourth out of five college players at the top of this draft, which I do think is a good chance to unfold this way. I'm going to take Dylan Tate from UC Santa Barbara, right-hander who came into the year, people were curious whether he could start or not. And he got that opportunity. He was lights out early in the season. And, you know, there have even been some mock drafts. I think you may have had him going. Did you have him going number one in a mock draft at one point, Jonathan?
Yeah, or an early one, yeah.
And his stuff has maybe faded slightly as he's pitched more innings than he has in any of his college seasons. So we don't have him going quite that high. But you're getting a guy who has two well-above-average pitches when he's on. I think the worst-case scenario is this guy's a closer. But he's athletic. I think he gets more accustomed to starting, gets more innings. You can build that workload up. I don't see any reason he can't stay in a rotation. I don't think it's a lock. I don't know if there's any pitcher who's a lock to stay in a rotation in any draft. But I like Dylan Tate at number five for Houston.
Jonathan, you have the Minnesota Twins at six.
And I like what we ended up doing with Houston there. And I think this, again, it could mirror what they do in terms of they get the high school guy at two and then the, you know, the high school bat and then the college arm at five. So at number six for the Minnesota Twins, I am actually going to go back to the high school bat route and take Kyle Tucker from Plant High School. Kyle's older brother Preston is in the big leagues now with the Astros and has certainly probably performed better just in terms of his march up to the big leagues than a lot of people thought. Even coming into the spring, most people saw Kyle Tucker as better than his brother, and he's done nothing but show that he deserves those accolades. He can really, really hit. I think he's going to profile well as a right fielder. He's going to hit for average and power. Of the high school bats after Rogers, I think he is the best bet to hit and be an impact hitter in the big leagues.
90-plus losses puts the Boston Red Sox back in the first round at number seven, Jim.
And I'm going to take the guy who I believe they would take in this scenario if it played out this way. I think they're looking at mainly college guys, not necessarily because they want to get a guy who's going to help them quicker, but I just think the guys on the top of their board are guys like Carson Fulmer and Alex Bregman who are both gone. I'm going to go with Andrew Benintendi out of Arkansas, who's probably got as much helium as anybody toward the top of the draft right now. I thought about Daz Cameron, high school outfielder from Georgia, who goes around this range. But I think Benintendi, with the year he's had in the SEC and proven himself against a higher level of competition, I think he projects as maybe a slightly better hitter than Daz. I think he's a little quicker than Daz. I think they have similar powers. I like Benintendi's ceiling just a little bit more than Daz Cameron's, although in the brief time I had to contemplate the pick, I did go back and forth on that one. That one was a tough one, but I'm taking Andrew Benintendi, and I actually think if the draft plays out this way, that Boston would take Andrew Benintendi at seven as well.
We go to the Windy City next. We start on the south side with the Chicago White Sox, John at eight.
So this is one of these, I don't know if you're having trouble with this, but getting my mind around who I would take versus what the team would do are two different things. And, you know, the White Sox, at this point, I think that what they would do is probably go college arm. They certainly have taken some toolsy guys, but for me, I'm going to be a best available player, and to me, that's Daz Cameron. So since Jim didn't have him go to the Red Sox, I'm going to have the White Sox take Mike Cameron's son here. And I think Jim sort of described him perfectly. He has tools. He's got all the tools, but he's not, wow, plus tools across the board. This isn't Ken Griffey Jr., or that type of player. But he does a lot of things really well. Obviously, the lineage doesn't hurt him. He has been a known quantity for a long time, and in some ways maybe that's hurt him just because he started showing up these national showcases as an underclassman. So a lot of time for scouts to pick him apart, but at eight I think it's a good pick.
Daz Cameron at eight to the Chicago White Sox, now up to the north side and fortifying an already bursting farm system, the Chicago Cubs at number nine, Jim.
Well, here I've got a dilemma because I've got two of my favorite pitchers here on the board, really three, in Tyler Jay from Illinois, John Harris from Missouri State, and Walker Buehler from Vanderbilt. I really like all three of those guys. I'm going to take Tyler Jay, who fascinates me. I mean, he's a 6'1". 175-pound lefty who's pitched all but one appearance this year has been relief for Illinois. That's his only start in 3 years of college, but he's so athletic. The arm is so quick, throws a ton of strikes. He throws, 95, 98 miles an hour. He's pitched multiple innings at times. So even if he loses a little velocity in the starting role, it's still a plus fastball. It's a great slider. He shows a changeup. I really like Tyler Jay. I'll take him at number nine for the Cubs. I do think if the first seven picks played out, like Jonathan was alluding to, I do think the White Sox would take a pitcher.
I agree with that.
Probably would take Tyler Jay.
Yep.
And then you might actually see Daz Cameron might actually go to the Cubs who've taken a lot of hitters. But with the board like this, I'm taking Tyler Jay at nine.
At 10, the fighting Phils. I don't think Rob Manfred would say it exactly like that. But
that's
the 10th pick, the Philadelphia Phillies.
You're allowed some poetic license here, Ed. Yeah, maybe he will say that now. You never know. You know, it's his first go round in the draft. We're not sure what he's going to bring to the table. So, you know, the Phillies are in a bit of conundrum, obviously. The team is aging at the major league level. Do they need help sooner rather than later? Will they, you know, go after that sort of exciting high-end high school guy? And there has been some talk of that, like a Tyler Stevenson, the high school catcher from Georgia. But I'm gonna say that they're gonna go for the college arm, and I'm gonna take Walker Buehler from the third Vanderbilt player to go in the top 10. And you know, they took Aaron Nola a year ago. Buehler doesn't have quite the same stuff that Nola does, but this is a guy who really knows how to pitch. He's got an advanced feel. I don't think it's going to take him that long to get there. He's not the most physical guy in the world like Nola, but I think he could march up their system and get to the big leagues and help them turn things around sooner rather than later.
With the 11th pick, the Cincinnati Reds goes to Jim Callis.
I don't think the Reds would necessarily go this route if the first 10 picks went in this fashion, but I'm going to take John Harris, Missouri State, the right-hander who I mentioned a couple minutes ago when I was talking about the Cubs at number 9. You know, I think of all the college pitchers, he might have the best chance to be a frontline starter in the big leagues. He's got the size. He's 6'4". He still has some projection remaining because he's still pretty skinny, although he's put on some weight and some strength since he's been at Missouri State. Great pitching factory there. The Bears have produced nearly a dozen big league pitchers in the last 10 years. Harris will show you 4-plus pitches at times. Not necessarily all in the same start, but he's got 4 pitches that all can be plus pitches. He's thrown more strikes this year. Highly athletic. I think that would be an easy pick for me if the board looked like this at number 11 for the Reds.
At number 12, Jonathan, the Miami Marlins.
I'm a little stuck here. I'm not sure which way I want to go. You know, there's some good high school talent. You know, and so I'm going to go with the guy that I like, that I've liked since I saw him over the summer. I know Jim likes him too. I'm going to take Mike Nikorak from Stroudsburg High School in Pennsylvania. And you know, he's kind of an interesting case in that he showed well the beginning of the summer, tired a little bit by the end, and kind of mirrored that in the spring where he came out of the gate showing mid-90s, really, really good breaking ball. The one thing when you play in eastern Pennsylvania is you have to wait for the weather to warm up, and it took a long time this year. And he doesn't have as much of a track record just because he can't go out and pitch as much. But in terms of ceiling, combined with freshness of arm, he's about as good as they come. And if you told me years from now, I know we've talked about this, the years from now, that he might be the best pitcher in this class, it's extremely possible. So I think at 12, it's a good pick.
At 13, we go upstate in Florida to the Tampa Bay Rays, Jim.
And I'm going to stay with high school pitchers. And I agree with everything Jonathan just said. I think Mike Nikorak probably does have the highest ceiling of any high school pitcher in this draft. I'm going to take a guy we have rated slightly ahead of him in Ash Russell from Cathedral High in Indianapolis. That might be my first high school player I've taken this entire draft, which
is about time.
More accidental than anything. But Ash Russell, I mean, plus fastball, plus slider, you know, long, lean frame, kind of physically resembles a Clay Buchholz with the build, and he's got some long, scraggly hair as well. I like Ash Russell. I don't know if you'd left both guys on the board for me, which one I might have taken, but you made it a little easier for me, so I'll take Ash Russell at 13 for the Rays. And if I'm picking for the Rays, I know I've had a lot of success developing young pitching, so I'm going with Ash Russell.
Continuing our march north to the Atlanta Braves, Jonathan Mayo has the pick at 14.
Well, you know, the running joke with the Braves is give them the best player from Georgia. I'm not going to do that, actually. I think that if the board were right, as it were right now, Tyler Stevenson from Kennesaw Mountain High School would probably be a pretty good get. But you know what? I'm going to roll the dice a little bit. And I'm going to take Colby Allard from San Clemente High School in California. Now, Allard is one of the guys who got hurt early on and kind of knocked him off the board. It's not an arm injury, but it is a stress reaction in his back. And for a guy who had some questions about durability, that does raise a red flag or two. For a team to take him in the first round, they're going to have hopefully see him pitch. He had been cleared to throw. He's not going to pitch in a game. They're going to need to see the medicals. But if he had been healthy all spring, this is a guy who probably would have gone in the top five, at least top 10 picks. He's a lefty, really good three-pitch mix, good command for a guy who has at least an above-average fastball, if not plus. So I'm going to roll the dice here a little bit and hope the high school lefty stays healthy.
The Milwaukee Brewers have the 15th pick in the first-year player draft. Jim, it's yours.
I'll go ahead and take Tyler Stevenson. I think what Jonathan said was accurate on both counts. I think the Braves would take Tyler Stevenson at 14 if he's there. And I do think Allard goes higher than this if he proves he's healthy before the draft comes around. But I'll take Tyler Stevenson. Position scarcity playing a role in this pick for me. I think he's the best all-around catcher in the draft fairly easily. You know, Chris Betts has more power upside, but Stevenson's a better defender. And if everything goes according to plan, and it doesn't always with high school catchers, it's a risky demographic, you might have the second coming of Matt Wieters here. You have a guy who, even though he's big, has a chance to be a good receiver. He's got arm strength. He's, I think, going to hit for some power. You maybe refine the bat a little bit, and he'll hit for a decent average. But I like Tyler Stevenson, especially in a draft where there just isn't very much catching help at all.
The New York Yankees, Jonathan Mayo, have the 16th pick.
I'm just writing down it. Hold on. Jim Callis says Tyler Stevenson is the next Matt Wieters.
Could be.
On the record.
I'm leaving that part out. I'm editing that out. I'm gonna stay the high school route for the Yankees, and he's the best guy, I think, on our board. And when we say our board, we're talking about the top 200 that is actually not officially out as we're recording this. But I'm gonna take Trenton Clark, the outfielder from Richland Hills High School in Texas. And you know, there's some good high school outfielders in this class. Daz Cameron's already gone off the board, as is Kyle Tucker. We still have Garrett Whitley from New York. Nick Plummer, who's maybe gone down a little bit, but still a good talent, is a guy whose name we're probably going to hear early. But Clark is the guy who is the best guy on the board here not to go as of yet.
At 17, Jim Callis has the Cleveland Indians.
I think Jonathan just took Trenton Clark over Garrett Whitley because he didn't want to have to pronounce Garrett Whitley's high school.
Exactly.
We'll see which one of us is brave enough to do that. Although I'm not going to do it with this pick. I'm also taking the guy who would be tops on our combined board, tops on my individual board. And I think if the draft played out like this, Cleveland would like to get this guy at 17. That would be Kyle Funkhauser from Louisville. That, you know, if we were discussing this 4 or 6 weeks ago, Kyle Funkhauser had a chance to go in the top five, and he's been in kind of a month-long slump for Louisville. You know, hasn't been as consistent, been knocked around a little bit, and it's hurting his draft stock. You know, he's got a plus fastball, he's got a starter's body, he's been durable for 3 years at Louisville. If you're quibbling with him, and again, at this point in the first round, you're not going to get a perfect player, he'd go a lot higher than this. You wish the secondary pitches were a little more consistent, you wish the control and command were a little bit more consistent, but I think Kyle Funkhauser, he's a proven college pitcher. I think he's got a great chance to be a number three starter in the big leagues, and he's durable. And I think that's exactly what Cleveland would be looking for at this point in the draft. I don't know if he'll quite make it this far, because college pitchers always seem to be in demand, but I think this would be a great pick for Cleveland at 17.
The world champion San Francisco Giants, Jonathan Mayo, are at 18.
Yeah, and I think Jim is right about Funkhauser. And, you know, I don't even know, are they in a regional?
They are. They're hosting.
Yeah, so, I mean, if he comes out and throws well, that could help him tick back up a couple of spots for sure. Well, I'm gonna go there since Jim was cowardly and would not pronounce Garrett Whitley's high school. So I will take Garrett Whitley from Niskayuna High School in New York. Nailed it. And Whitley, you know, is another guy, Northeast guy, who kind of, I don't say he didn't come out of nowhere, but last summer really jumped on radars by how he performed against better competition all summer. I had one scout compare his bat speed to Justin Upton's. You know, whether or not he's Justin Upton remains to be seen, but he's got speed, he can stay in center field, he's going to hit, and there's some power to come. And another one of these high ceiling guys who, when all is said and done, when we look back at this draft 10 years from now, may be one of the better all-around players that comes from this class.
The Pittsburgh Pirates have the 19th pick. Jim, high school or college guy?
I'm going to go high school. I'm going to take our third Georgia high schooler of the first round so far, and Cornelius Randolph, who's from Griffin High School, which is also the alma mater of Tim Beckham, the number one overall pick in the 2008 draft by the Rays. You know, it's funny, Jonathan, I don't know if you would necessarily agree with this, but for a guy who's, I think, clearly one of the best all-around high school hitters in this draft, I'd say as much as anybody, even I'll throw Brendan Rodgers and Daz Cameron, these guys in there, you know, as good a chance as any of these guys to hit for both average and power. Cornelius Randolph doesn't get talked about as much as maybe I think he should. He's not going to be a shortstop. He's probably going to be a third baseman at the next level, but he has the arm strength, and he definitely has the bat to profile there. And I think this is about the area of the draft where he'll go. I think he'll, if he's not off the board a couple picks before this, he won't last much longer. But for a guy, you know, the guys we've mentioned before this, Rogers, Tucker might be the guy who's the best chance to do both. You know, Daz Cameron, et cetera, Trenton Clark, Garrett Whitley, you know, Cornelius Randolph doesn't get mentioned as much. And while he's not necessarily the athlete these other guys are, the plus athlete these other guys are, he's going to play in the infield.
And I think you're right. And I think that's maybe why his name has not created as much buzz, just because, yeah, he probably can play third, but he doesn't look like the typical third baseman body-wise. People have a little trouble seeing the profile. But I don't, you know, every scout I've ever talked to about him is like, oh, wow, he can really hit. And when you hear that, usually those those guys do well. And I think I've seen some mocks where Randolph has gone right around here, so it makes a lot of sense.
Let's see if the next guy likes green. Goodness knows he's going to get a lot of green to sign in the first round. The Oakland Athletics have the next pick, Jonathan, at 20.
Some interesting choices here. You could go, there's a college bat that could be of interest. There's a couple of arms. I think that I'm going to go, quote unquote, a little bit safer here and take James Caprillion from UCLA. And, you know, this is sort of a guy who kind of fits this sort of quintessential college performer. The stuff doesn't wow you, although it's been a little bit better this spring, which is, why I think he may sneak up a little bit, because sometimes those college performers do better than you expect. He's just gone out and pitched every Friday night for the last 2 years for UCLA and done well. And this year he's been as consistently good as maybe anybody in the country. He's not been as dominant as a Carson Fulmer, but I don't think he's had a bad start all year, and he's done it against some good teams out west, and he just really knows how to pitch, and because of the uptick in stuff, maybe you think there's a little bit more there that can be unlocked, so I'm happy to take him here at 20.
The America League champion Kansas City Royals are at 21 with Jim Callis picking.
And I like the Caprillion pick. I would have thought about him also. I think he's got about as high a floor as any of these college pitchers we talked about in the first round, and the stuff's pretty good too. I think the Royals, when you think the Royals, you think about them going for like the athletic, multi-tooled player. I'm going to go with more of a guy who fits on a corner, but is, in my mind, clearly the best college bat remaining at this point, in Ian Happ from Cincinnati. Played some second base as a freshman. I don't think he's really got a chance to play there in pro ball. Somebody may try him there and see if it works, but the scouts I've talked to don't think it will. But, you know, Happ's played very, very well. He's been as good a hitter as there has been, all-around hitter in the Cape Cod League the last two summers. He's produced again this spring, a guy who really wasn't that highly regarded coming out of high school. I think he can fit that right field profile. He's a switch hitter. He's going to hit for average. He has enough power to play in a corner, and I think that would be a nice fit for the Royals here at 21.
At 22, Jonathan Mayo picks for the Detroit Tigers.
You know, I think this is going to be an instance where, and I think this is maybe even who I had as their pick in my last mock. It fits what the kind of thing that the Detroit Tigers do, and I think that's who I would take. It's Phil Bickford from the College of Southern Nevada, the former home of Bryce Harper, for those of you who say, wait, that sounds familiar. Now, Bickford's an interesting case. Never was fully answered. He was taken 10th overall by the Blue Jays a couple years ago, didn't sign. It was kind of mysterious. He went to Fullerton for a year, then transferred to be eligible for the draft. In the Cape Cod this summer, pitching out of the bullpen, his stuff was electric, upper 90s kind of stuff. You know that you could shorten him up if you wanted him to, and he could be a back end, maybe even a closer. He's gone out this year, and I mean, yes, it's junior college, but he's put up video game numbers, and he's shown, while he's not throwing 97, 98, he's still been mid-90s. The breaking ball's been really good. He's got the ability to maintain velocity deep. You send him out as a starter and see what happens. And worst case, if it doesn't work, if the command isn't there, then you shorten him up, and you've got a really, really good short reliever.
With the 23rd pick, the St. Louis Cardinals and Jim Callis.
I'm going to take a guy who I think also would be in Detroit's mix. I like the Bickford pick for them. I think that's the type of thing they would do. I think they'd also look at a guy like Donnie Everett, the right-hander from Clarksville High School in Tennessee. You know, I don't think he's necessarily passed Russell or Nickerack, but I think he's really closed the gap. And I think he could go higher than this when the draft rolls around. He run his fastball into the upper 90s repeatedly. He's got one of the best. You know, I think in terms of just pure velocity, he shows more than Russell or Nickerack. So we'll see. I don't know if that would necessarily be a guy the Cardinals would take at 23. But I think in terms of talent upside that's left on the board, you know, mitigating, I'd say I did consider a guy you might be taking at 24, but I couldn't quite pull the trigger. I'll take Donnie Everett. I love the ceiling on that kid.
Three more picks to go in the first round, beginning with, at 24, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Jonathan?
Right. The next group of guys we have on our talent board, there are question marks with all of them, some huge and some small. I think I may minimize risk a little bit and take the high school bat. I'm going to take Chris Betts from Wilson High School. Now, you know, we started the year with Betts being listed as the best catcher in the class, and to some he might still be. There are question marks about whether or not he could stay behind the plate long term. There are enough people that like his bat, even if he's got to move to, say, first base, which is probably where he would go to, that he's probably going to do pretty well on draft day. The biggest problem is that he's had an elbow injury, so he hasn't been behind the plate. Now, arm strength has not been the question. That's his best defensive tool. But if you want to get more looks at him and see what he looks like behind the plate as much as possible, and he hasn't caught in 3 weeks, it gets tougher to pull the trigger in the first round, and that may hurt him a little bit when all is said and done in terms of when he gets taken off the board on June 8th. But I do like his bat. I think he's got a chance to hit for average and power at the next level.
The next to last pick in the first round belongs to the Baltimore Orioles and Jim Callis.
Well, I'll take a guy that I don't really think they would take because Peter Angelos usually likes the physicals to be pretty clean. But I'm going to go ahead and I'll take Brady Aiken. It's time.
Couldn't do it.
I almost did a 23. Brady Aiken, obviously number one pick in last year's draft, had a deal worked out for $6.5 million and then failed the post-draft physical over concerns. There was not a tear, but there were concerns about the state of his ligament in his elbow, which he did tear this spring and required Tommy John surgery. And I do think there is more concern with this Tommy John surgery, at least from the people I've talked to in the industry, than there is normally. You know, we've seen guys like Hoffman, Eric Fetty, Lucas Giolito, all go high in recent drafts. I think there's more concern with Aiken. But that said, I can't pass up the ceiling here at 25. And this is a guy who legitimately was number one pick in last year's draft on talent. I think if you had a fully healthy Brady Aiken this year, he could have been the number one overall pick this year. You're talking about a lefty with three quality pitches, athleticism, command, control. So I'll roll the dice a little bit and take Brady Aiken here at 25.
Gutsy.
And with the 26th and final pick of the first round, it's the Los Angeles Angels and Jonathan Mayo.
I wanted to end this with like a bang and pick like a high, like, and you know what? He's not there.
Yeah, you got other injured high ceiling guys you can take if you want.
That's true. But, you know, I think when you're picking 26th, you know, you want value. And I am going to take a guy who had an injury who probably would go in higher if he had stayed healthy all year, and that's Nathan Kirby from Virginia. And it's not a sexy pick. He had some issues. His stuff backed up a little bit even before he had an oblique injury, so it's not affecting his arm. There was some concern about his command. The velocity was down, but I think that was more a question of him just throwing way too many sliders, and that's kind of beyond his control. The college program kind of dictates that, and I think that once he gets in the pro game and they get him back to pitching off his fastball, which is what he did in his sophomore year when he was really, really good, then the stuff is going to bounce back. And at 26, this is a guy who, at the very least, you know, we talked about low floor. He's got a low floor, but at best, this is a guy who has a chance to you know, be a good mid-rotation starter.
So that's how the first round will go. That's how it will turn
out.
That's how it should go.
This is how it should go. This is not a prediction of the first round.
I know. And now to this. A name or two that had been mentioned in the first round that neither of you mentioned. John, start with you first.
Well, if I'm looking at it as a guy who I think could very well go in the first round that we didn't take off the board, I'll probably say Kevin Newman from Arizona. His name has been mentioned a lot. He's kind of I don't want to call him a lightning rod. This may be a little over dramatic, but in terms of getting differing opinions, you could talk to one scout and they love him. They're sure he can stay at shortstop and he's going to hit enough. You know, he's hit for average. And then you talk to someone else and they say, well, but the numbers are kind of soft. He hasn't done that much. And I don't even think he can stay at short. So he's kind of been up and down, but his name has certainly been bandied about in the second half of the first round, maybe even up a little higher.
Jim, what do you think?
I'll give you two names. Nick Plummer, outfielder from Brother Rice High School in Michigan. He was considered on a par with guys like Daz Cameron, Kyle Tucker, Trenton Clark, Garrett Whitley. Hasn't had the best senior season, had a bad game or a bad doubleheader a couple weeks ago where he struck out four times in front of a lot of guys who came in to see him. So I don't know if he necessarily goes in the first round, but his tools are on a par with those other high school outfielders. And then Michael Mattiuola from Duke, whose situation is kind of similar to Brady Aikens. He was at the top of our list, top three. We had him as a top three guy coming into the year. Yeah. He's had Tommy John surgery. There's more concern about his Tommy John surgery than the typical guy because he also has, you know, back issues. He's never really pitched more than 60 innings in a year, combined college season and summer season. So there's some concern about him coming back, but when he's healthy, it's premium stuff. So I think those guys could factor in still into those 26 regular first-round picks. But as of now, kind of hard to pull the trigger. They were my next couple guys on the board.
Quickly, if you had to gauge how strong the first round is in comparison to each of the first rounds that you guys have analyzed through the years, where do you put it, John?
Not strong. That's how I would put it. You know, people knock every draft class. I think there's some depth up the middle. We saw, you know, the college shortstops, you know, go off the board pretty early, and there's some intriguing high school bats, but it's not as strong as it's been, I think, over the past several years.
I'd agree with that. I mean, I think what it's missing is you don't have those clear guys at the top who right. scream out at you, hey, I'm a top five pick. I do think the depth is maybe a little underrated in this draft because I think it gets overshadowed by everybody bemoaning the fact that you don't have those guys at the top. But I think there are some players to be had. And then the injury factor. I mean, you might get some – if these guys bounce back with a Brady Aiken, a Nathan Kirby, a Michael Mattiuola, you might get some great value with those guys late in the first round.
And I will say quickly in terms of the depth, as you get further on, I think it actually becomes a stronger class overall. There aren't those – standout impact guys at the top, but you know, in the discussions we've had with a lot of scouts, you know, I've heard a lot of, you know, picking in the second, third, fourth round, you might be better off picking there than you are picking up top, just because there is going to be good talent to be had at that stage in the draft.
So much fun working with you guys to hear this, and it's going to be fun to see how it plays out. On behalf of Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, I'm Ed Randall. Thanks for listening to the Pipeline Podcast.